plans to stop the radical Democrats by electing a Republican House and a Republican Senate. Democrats have become totally unhinged. They've gone crazy. The Democrats have become too extreme, and they've become, frankly, too dangerous to govern. They've gone wacko. You don't hand matches to an arsonist, and you don't give power to an angry left-wing mob, and that's what the Democrats have become.
Friday, October 12th, 2018. Yes, the day, October 12th, 2018. You know, October 12th, the day in 1492 when Christopher Columbus began the genocide that gives us the country that we have today. And by the way, I want to meet those Democrats that Trump was talking about because I can't seem to find them. I'm looking for my left-wing mob folks and they're just not around. Anyways, welcome to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. In this week's show, the IPCC, you know, the International Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, believes that we only have 12 years left to slow down disastrous effects of climate change. But some scientists think that the report was a little too cautious. That's right, cautious. Speaking of climate change, Hurricane Michael exploded from a tropical storm to a devastating Category 4 hurricane in just 72 hours. It was the first Category 4 to hit the Florida Panhandle in its history, and that represents the fourth Category 4 hurricane to hit the United States in the past 16 months. Nearly a dozen people were killed. Hurricane Michael, that number is expected to rise. And Chuck Schumer, speaking of the opposite of a hurricane, Chuck Schumer and the Senate Democrats say, "Thank you, sir, may I have another?" as they reach a deal with Mitch McConnell to pack the courts with 15 more right-wing judges. What do the Democrats do to get out of the deal? Oh, well, they get to maintain a sense of decorum as the GOP burns down the 20th century. Independent Saudi journalist and Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi disappeared inside a Saudi consulate in Istanbul this week. Turkish officials now say that they have video evidence that Khashoggi was captured, tortured, and killed. Trump says, well, he's not a U.S. citizen, right? So let the arms deal go through. Election interference from the GOP? Yes, indeed. It's election time and more attempts are being made to deny the people right to vote. We'll have some discussion about North Dakota, Georgia, and a college, crazy story about a college down in Texas, where they're doing their best to prevent Democratic-leaning voters from voting. Facebook announced this week, speaking of election interference, that it is purging 559 pages and 251 accounts run by not Russians, Americans, in order to spread disinformation. Yes, they learned the lessons well from Russia's disinformation campaign during the 2016 election. And Susan Collins gave the most self-serving speech to support Kavanaugh and to give her whole party the veneer of decency or humanity. And in commentary on the sad state of our public life, Taylor Swift's Instagram post in favor of Democrats resulted in 65,000 voter registrations in a single 24-hour period. That's what it takes, I guess, folks. Freaking Taylor Swift. Today's Pennsylvania focus, Scott Wagner, sent out a fundraising email this week claiming that he had tapped his fortune dry. Oh my God, what are we going to do?
I'm in a waste management business. Everybody immediately assumes you're mobbed up. It's a stereotype, and it's offensive.
There you go. And buddy, you know what? It looks like the family is having some problems. Yeah, well, despite that, he blamed the Republican establishment for not helping him to compare. I can't even get to the next section, Sean. I'm just like, yo. He also blamed the Republican establishment for not helping him and compared his failing campaign to a public lynching. Like, I mean, first of all, I'm like, this is the freaking world we're in. And of course, that has to be followed up by saying, Scott Wagner is bringing diamond and silk to Philadelphia. You got that? Where the hell's Gritty? We need Gritty. Because it's like, oh my God. There's a new Koch brother funded organization Commonwealth Leaders Fund, and he just dropped $100,000 into Jeremy Schaffer's Senate campaign. Marty Nothstein sues Elton Morning Call over the reporting of his sexual harassment allegations. And DeSales University poll has Susan Wilde up in the Lehigh Valley up by 19. And a pro-Trump PAC is going to dump $700,000 into the PA 10th to help save Scott Perry. Yes, who would have thought that Scott Perry was going to be in jeopardy at this point? I'll tell you who thought it. Sean thought it. In today's last call, Voyager 2 may soon be entering interstellar space. And there's people that are calling this, my favorite term yet, wild space. I love it. As it approaches the fringe of the heliosphere. And Gritty, yes, you would know we're not getting away without talking about Gritty, seizes the means of production and becomes the Antifa superhero we've been all looking for. Memes of the new Philly Flyers mascot have gotten so out of hand that the Wall Street Journal published an op-ed denouncing the leftist icon. We've been playing this for a while. And Free Will's got a bunch of new and recent releases, both tomorrow and we got an Imperial Milk Stout called Sir Lamington. And last week we had Coffee Cherry Cream Pie. Pretty cool. Want to remind everybody to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. Huge shout out to our newest member, Marilyn. Marilyn, thank you so much. Marilyn joined as a member of Raging Chicken for at the $5 a month level. Thank you so much. Thank you to Marilyn, and thank you to everyone who continues to support Raging Chicken Press. Thank you for your support. It's meant the world. And a special shout out goes to the one and only Lou Ryan for keeping RCP in the mix on our Etsy page. Yep, you can pick up an awesome handmade scarf over on Lou's Scars for Justice Etsy page and choose Raging Chicken Press as the organization you want the proceeds to benefit. Thank you, Lou, and all her customers for the latest contribution. And I have to say, I bought one last year, right? Her scarves are awesome. I literally say this, I will tell this, I've said this 1,000 times, people are probably sick of me saying this, I haven't said this on the air before, but it's the best freaking scarf I've ever had in my life, right? It's warm, it's soft, it's everything you want in a scarf, so go over, check it out, Scarves for Justice on Etsy. And look, folks, if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media, and you can help support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. Not ready to become a member? No problem. Just go to RagingChickenPress.org, click on the big blue donate button on the right sidebar. Look, midterms are right around the corner, less than a month. Help us out. Become a member. Patreon.com/RCPress today for as little as $5 a month. Be like Marilyn. Do like Marilyn. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press today. Well, Sean, what the hell day is it, man? What day is it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. We're talking about this beforehand, but like, I literally spent like minutes racking my brain figuring out if like Kavanaugh was confirmed last Saturday or the Saturday before, because like of all the crazy shit that happens this week.
Yeah, I literally, that I had off on Monday and Tuesday. It was like a fall break, and my kids had off on Monday, and that just kind of like set the week off on a weird tilt to begin with. And then that was just enough to basically throw my like internal whatever like time gyroscope off its kilter. Like, I have no idea what the hell, what happened when, and what was last week, what was this week. Because it's nuts.
I mean, if we're watching the world burn, literally and figuratively, yep, might as well have fun while it's happening at this point.
Hey, why not? You know, I was actually seriously considering, I know it's like early in the morning, or not early right now, because I know I delayed forever, but you know, I was actually thinking like before, you know, I think I need a beer to start this podcast today. You know, so
just go straight for the whiskey.
Yeah, right, no. But I'm no
sauce. A nice shot of Dewar's.
Yeah.
You know.
Knob Creek.
Yeah.
But I've got some actually good stuff. And it's called the Boardroom. You ever heard of it? It's a distillery in Lansdale.
Mm-hmm.
And they do all sorts of really cool stuff. They actually, they come up to our farmer's market up here in Perkasie. And we got a good chunk of my family gifts last Christmas from them. And they do things like, they have like a beet vodka and a carrot vodka. Just really cool stuff. Just good people that, you know, I've talked with them a lot last week and stuff. So I was like, I got that bottle of, like, there's a ginger one that's upstairs. I was like, oh, let's take that. Just started shooting it back. But no, I'm sticking with coffee. I'm sticking with coffee for the day here. And, you know, I think we start off this week with the IPCC report that, look, it was – it's, I don't know what else to say other than it was freaking frightening as all hell.
I have not read the report. I have not really read up on it at all, but, like, you know, I took environmental science in college.
So you're saying, like, I know it's bad. I didn't need to read the report because I know it's bad.
And I've read like plenty of books and took classes on this shit. And yeah, you know.
Yeah,
I'm really more interested in some of the dissenting articles saying that this report was too cautious.
Yeah,
you know, but you know, we only got 12 years left, so which is like a blink of an eye, fraction of a second in geological time. So you know, that's
yeah. So why don't we just
you know, let's enjoy it up, live it up.
Let's quit the podcast right now. What the hell's the point, really? Right. No, there was, you know, I'm going to space the guy's name. It'll come back to me in a minute. But he was on
Michael Mann.
No. He was on Majority Report earlier this week. He's a writer for the New Yorker, I think, or New York Magazine. He's been writing about this stuff. I'll look it up in a second. But he was on and says basically what on the caution aspect of stuff, right? I mean, here's basically the deal, right? Is that basically for a long time scientists have been saying that. We cannot go above the 2 degrees Celsius of warming before we start to have kind of devastating and disastrous consequences, right? That seems to be the critical threshold, right? Now, there were several years ago that, if you remember, it was before Paris even, is that there were a lot of these kind of leaders from a lot of island nations, right, that were basically coming forward and saying, look, 2 degrees Celsius might be fine if you're living in Europe or if you're living in the United States, and that might be your disastrous. He's like, but we're already underwater by that point, right? So two degrees Celsius is too much. And so basically, you know, that's too much to begin with. We got to go far below that unless we're going to start talking about having to relocate our entire nations. And so apparently this is one of the things that motivated the hard look that the IPCC was taking in this past report. And basically saying, look, if we want to actually prevent island nations from going underwater, we're going to have to hold this closer to 1.5 degrees Celsius, right? And the problem is with this is that the report suggests that we have to have decisive action. We have to do all this stuff right at this point. But what a lot of the critics are coming out and saying, and not critics in the sense that, you know, like climate change is a hoax. Not those kind of critics, right? Those are
fucking body heat, man.
Those are ostriches, right? Those are just ostriches, right?
The Earth moves closer to the sun every year. We have more people. You know, humans have warm bodies. So is heat coming off? We're just going through a lot of change. But I think we are, as a society, doing the best we can.
That was Scott Wagner taking a reading directly from the IPCC report, right? And when asked about whether or not – does that mean he believes in climate change now? What he said was
– I'm smart enough to, you know, form my own opinions.
Yes, he was. Body heat, everybody. That's what does it. But anyways, the IPCC, some of the critics are saying that, look, what those scientists that wrote that report will tell you – right. It's not in the report, but what they'll tell you if you talk with them, like off the record, is that there's no way at this point. There's virtually no way that we are going to not surpass the 2 degrees warming. Right. And the 12 years. Right. Especially if you think about what they're saying, is that we have 12 years to prevent catastrophic consequences of climate change. 12 years. Right. So whatever. And, you know, if you look at the dates on this, they're talking about by 2040. Right. And I look at that and I'm like, yep, I'll probably be still alive for this. Right. So it's in our lifetimes now. What used to be a long time off is now in our lifetimes. The report predicts that there could be global food shortages, the inundation of coastal cities and refugee crisis unlike the world has ever seen.
Like this is
that's
this
the
is
cautious a, version.
This is a catastrophe where the Earth's population can go from 7 billion to like 1 billion by the end of the century.
Right.
Like that's like, this is like that type of like event.
Yep.
I mean, like, you know, we, one of the examples in college that we always had, were like the population rates and stuff like that. And, you know, we are essentially the deer that gets stranded on an island, right? Like, you know, it's always like, this is like one of the examples. And the deer starts reproducing and the population of the deer go bonkers and haywire and it overshoots the carrying capacity of that land. And once you overshoot the carrying capacity, you then use up all the resources and then like, life comes crashing down really hard and really fast.
That's right. But the, I mean, the only problem with that deer, analogy, though, right, is that in the deer on the island analogy, that's a natural process. We're talking about something that is completely the result of human activity.
But the deer, we're nothing but a, like an animal species. And this is a natural process we're going to go through. We're overshooting our carrying capacity for the planet. We are overusing our resources. We are, you know, we're running out of fossil fuels. We're depleting them. I mean, it's a finite resource. And we're putting everything back up into the atmosphere. And this is, we're, I mean, like in most simplistic terms, you know, like we're going to overshoot the carrying capacity of this planet because that is just an artificially inflated number at this point. By the use of the resources we're using now. And once those resources dry up, once climate change happens, like nature's going to take over and, you know, we're going to have a huge population crash. I mean, it's like simple scientific demographics at this point. Like yeah. It's just going to plummet and it's going to go from like 7 billion people to like a billion within this, like, with by the end of the century. And it's like, this is something that might have happened once in human history, a population crash like this. And that's like when one of the volcanoes happened, there was a big bottleneck.
It was also during the plague. I mean, the plague is another one.
Yeah. You know, like this is like, but like we came really close to going extinct once. And that was because of a climate change, climate induced like volcanic eruption that happened, you know, like 100,000, 200,000 years ago. Where like something like that almost wiped us off the planet. Like that's where we're going.
Yep. Yep. The guy I was talking about before, his name is he was on let's see, I guess that would be Tuesday. He was on the Majority Report. His name is David Wallace Wells, right? And he writes for New York Magazine. I'd really encourage people to check that out. You go to kind of majorityreportradio.com and check out the episode for 10/9. And one of the things that David Wallace Wells is by no means a radical, right? He is, you know, what? Well, I'm not going to characterize him, but you can go kind of look at what he says. But one of the things that he says is he wrote this piece called "How Did the End of the World Become Old News?" And talks about some of the consequences and the understatedness of the IPCC report. And he's written about some of the, you know, some of the consequences of global warming that people aren't generally looking at. And things like, for example, the economic impact. I mean, we're basically talking about the equivalent, what some scientists are saying and some even the military, for example, is saying is that we could see a kind of reduction in economic output, right, kind of the GDPs of nations. That would basically be the equivalent of a global depression, right? Except one that's permanent, right? Because there's no going back because you've had such a wreck of the infrastructure. The military is looking at so many, I'm sorry, the Navy is looking at all of its bases and realizing that, okay, we could be talking about mid-century, mid to late century. Many of these bases are going to be underwater, right? That they're going to have to completely rebuild the infrastructure of the Navy. Right, you're talking about the fact that you have the migration of a whole bunch of kind of bacteria and viruses, right, and disease-bearing insects, right, are migrating further and further north out because of warming, and that's happening slowly. All this kind of stuff is pretty devastating, and you know, look, I mean, we just got done talking about climate change in one of my classes. We use it as a kind of an example for critical research and stuff like this, but it's just, I don't want to say it's depressing right? Because that's too easy of an out, right? But it is kind of it's alarming to the point of like I feel like I need to kind of shift my gears to find out how the hell do I have an impact any place that I touch that I'm involved with, because this is just so huge.
Yeah.
So yeah, nothing like the carrying capacity of the planet to drive you to occupy Mars. Oh God.
And speaking of climate change,
yes.
Hurricane Michael this week. What a thing that was. Like just seeing that happen and
yep.
I mean, like people were just expecting this to hit a Category 1 hurricane, explode into a Category 4. Some of the like just seeing the pictures of that. I mean, it looked like a bomb went off, like one of those like
yep.
Like the whole entire town was just leveled.
Like that Mexico Beach area in particular was just like gone.
Yeah. Gone. Wiped off the map. And these are the type of storms that we're going to be having on a more thing. And like I mean, it was still a hurricane, like a Category 3 hurricane by the time it hit Georgia, like into the inland Georgia.
That blew my mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it. Yeah, it was.
Well, if you look at, you know, I mean, I don't like kind of conflating weather with climate. You know what I'm saying? But you look at the weather that we've been having, like I don't know, all summer long. This is like rainy, damp, like crazy humid thing. That is, you know, those are the same kind of indications that you get when it happens when you have the slowing of certain of currents and changing of the jet stream in order to produce this kind of weather. And one of the things that I found, I was watching all these news reports, like kind of local news reports and some national news reports about Michael, just to kind of just to, you know, again, witness it, I guess, and to find out what was going on and, you know, how bad it was gotten. And one of the things they kept on saying, this goes to the point that you were talking about initially about, you know, this went from like a Category 2 to a Category 4 in like 72 hours. And a lot of the reporting kept on saying, you know, it was a Category 2. And so a lot of people didn't leave. Right. So a Category 2, Category 1. Okay. Yeah. We can probably handle this. And the line was until it hit the unusually warm waters of the Gulf, which fueled this rapid kind of like increase in its devastation from a Category 2, I guess, to a Category 4. And it was actually on when it made landfall, it was just like, you know, wind speeds were like 2 to 3 miles an hour slower than they would need to be caught at a Category 5 storm. Right, so it was at the very upper level of a Category 4. And that was the whole thing. And I kept on coming back to that fact, saying that unusually warm waters of the Gulf, right? This is no longer unusual, right? This is going to be standard. That's exactly what they said about what happened with Harvey, right? This is kind of what they said. There's going to be an increase of this because the Gulf is remaining warmer than usual. Usual meaning in historic terms. But we can count on that kind of being a constant, which means this is a dynamic that we're just going to – look, we're either going to do something about it or we're going to get used to it. And frankly, we got to do both right now because it takes – it's not like you can switch off, you know, fossil fuel burning, right? It's going to take time even to get that carbon out of the air. So now we basically made our bed and we're going to have to find ways of dealing with this in a way that is humane, right, is forward-looking and transformational, right? This is what Naomi Klein's argument is. Like this does change everything. So if you want to say what every, you know, not only are we having political revolutions that we're seeing kind of like democratic socialists kind of getting elected, we're seeing kind of like progressive upsurge. We have an opportunity if we kind of put all of our energy into this stuff to fundamentally transform our economy too as well. And I think we have to if we give any lip service whatsoever to the planet and producing something that is, you know, livable for our children, and our children's children. It's alarming. I mean, go read this, folks. I mean, we'll have a link to an article from Scientific American, which is going to kind of run through some of this stuff. I'll try to remember to put a link into the episode with David Wallace Wells of the Majority Report to listen to what he's got to say. And look, don't turn away. Right? Don't look away. We've got to face this head on because this is it's just going to get more devastating as the years go on. But there are people who do like to just look away and pretend that there's no problem. And those people will be Senate Democrats. All right. I nearly lost my mind when I heard this.
I was reading your tweets last night.
I was so mad. David Dayan had a piece on there, and he's like, yep, yeah, pretty much where I'm at when I wrote this piece when they did this last time, right? So, okay, if you have not heard, Senate Democrats just struck a deal with Mitch McConnell, right, in the Senate, to go ahead and approve 15 more justices. 15 more, right? And why? So that the Democrats could get home and campaign. Presumably, that also means the Republicans could get home and campaign. But Mitch McConnell gets 15 right-wing justices put on the court. The Democrats get a chance to campaign, which they would have gotten anyways.
I heard the deal was instead of using a lighter to burn down the house, Schumer gave McConnell a book of matches to burn down the house.
Yeah.
It's a little bit harder to do that from what I heard.
Yeah.
But the house is still going to burn down.
You think?
But they're just going to do it in a slower fashion.
Well, here, this just blows my mind. This is the kind of stuff that does make me, I'll be kind and say nervous.
Did you see the article this week where in a New York Review of Books, mm-hmm. where a prominent historian on the Holocaust, like Cornell, basically compared Mitch McConnell to the gravedigger of American democracy?
Oh, interesting. That's about right.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet, but I've read critiques on this article. It's definitely something worth checking out.
Yeah.
If you got like an hour to just look over this like huge thesis pretty much on McConnell and being the gravedigger of American democracy, especially after this week.
Yeah. So let me just run through the particulars of this. So basically, here's the deal, right? Obviously, midterm elections are coming up, right? The Democrats have a chance to take over the Senate, right? But that is looking increasingly like an uphill battle, in part because of things like, oh, I don't know, voter suppression. Right. That's happening. Right. So this is a very real power struggle that's going to be going on here. Sean was saying before we went on today that 538 is basically put up a poll that it's like 73% chance,
78% chance the Democrats take the House, 18% chance they take the Senate.
Right.
The Senate, they're pretty much not going to take.
Yeah, that's what it looks like right now. But there's look, you know, again, these polls have been off. Obviously, we have Trump as a president. So they're fighting hard battles in order to try to, one, either try to take the Senate or at the very least, try to keep the margins as they are, like a 2-vote margin. Right. So Mitch McConnell has over like 40 justices that he wants approved. Right. And, they were going to go ahead. And now all the Senate Democrats had to do was basically saying, okay, for each one of these justices, we're going to require the mandated 30 hours or whatever of debate. And that would have forced the process to go extraordinarily slow, right? It would have gummed up the works a little bit. It would have allowed the Democrats and the Republicans, but, you know, Democrats basically to make their case on the kind of the public stage about why they're kind of pushing back against these and why what the Republicans are trying to do. But instead, Chuck Schumer, just like he did about a month ago, decides
got nothing out of the deal.
Yeah. Well, it basically said, no, we want to get home to campaign. So we're going to cut this deal with Senate Republicans and Mitch McConnell in particular to give him up, down, quick votes on 15 justices. And then so that we can all go home and campaign. Right. So here's the problem with this, right, is that the way this is framed. Well, I should say before I get there, one of the things that you should see about this is what this means is Trump and McConnell. And this is kind of coming out of the Washington Post article on this. Trump and McConnell can now take credit for installing 84 judges to lifetime appointments on the nation's courts. Two of the Supreme Court, 29 appellate judges and the circuit courts on the 29 appellate judges on the circuit courts and 53 on the district courts. That means that once all these folks are confirmed and sworn in, roughly one out of every six circuit judges will be a Trump nominee. Right? That is important. That is devastating to what's going on in our courts. Now, so the argument or the I don't know, the spin that the Democrats, the Senate Democrats, are trying to give to this, right? Because Cory Booker first came out and says, no, we are not going to do this. We are going to have normal order, and we're going to kind of fight every single one of them. But then somehow he came around, right? And so they could all go home. This is the problem. The problem with that is, like, the Democrats said, like, listen, we got to go home because we have to try to win these races. So we need it. They need the opportunity. Our Democratic senators need the opportunity to campaign. So we go home. The problem with that is there's nothing requiring all of the Democratic senators to stay behind for regular business. You could basically say, hey, the 20 of you or whatever it is, 20 of you who are up for election, right, are facing tough battles, you go campaign. The rest of us here are going to dig in and muck up the works and use this as an opportunity to campaign about why the Democrats will fight to prevent the downturn of American democracy. Right? That's all it takes. Matter of fact, under Senate rules, all it takes is one Democratic senator, like, oh, I don't know, Chuck Schumer. Right. He could stay behind as the freaking Senate leader for the Democrats.
Casey could stay behind because he's up by 20 points.
That's what I'm saying. Right. As like they could stay behind and basically say, no, I refuse unanimous consent. I'm going to force you to call the roll. I am going to force a 30-hour debate. Right. They could do all that stuff to slow down these nominees and use it as an opportunity to publicly fight over this stuff, to carry on what was going on about what we saw with Brett Kavanaugh, with every single other one of these freaking justices, to say, no, we will no longer do this. Instead, Schumer rolled over, freaking played dead, let Mitch McConnell pet his underbelly, right, so as get his little leg going for him so he can go home and campaign, right? It's disgusting. I don't know what the hell these people are thinking. And any Democrat that tells you it was so that they could go home and campaign to make sure that they win the Senate, they are expecting you not to know the rules of the Senate. They're expecting you to assume that that's a logical argument when it is not, because a group of them could have stayed back, dug the trenches, and fought. And instead, this is what we get. And that would have actually put Republicans in a worse situation, because if you had a bunch of the Democrats who were going back home to campaign, right? But in order to get those judges approved that you needed, those Republicans had to stay, that would mean you tie up the Republicans who are running for offices in difficult states, right? While you allow the Democrats to go do it. Because the Democrats are not going to win those anyways. And that is true. So Mazie Hirono comes out and says, look, we don't have the votes anyways, so we might as well kind of campaign. False choices. False freaking choices. And the fact that Chuck Schumer, I swear to God, should be gone. Right. The fact that this shows his leadership, this is his leadership. This is what Democrats show to fight. Forget it. Right. And frankly, you know, you've heard me say different versions of this before. I'm with Eric Holder on this. And I know the right wing's having a blast with this. But so far, the Democrats want to play nice. And, you know, they want to do the Michelle Obama thing. When they go low, we go high. Right. What I've said. Right. No. When they go low, punch down. Right. What Eric Holder said this week, when they go low, kick them. Right. None of this freaking playing nice. This is not about civil discourse. This is about a power struggle. And it's going to be too late unless we freaking wake up to that fact.
Speaking about judges.
Yeah.
Susan Collins.
Oh, my God. I'm not. You go ahead. Talk about her. I'm not talking about her. My blood pressure's up already now.
I all I could say is, man, what a fucking speech that was. I watched that in anger, shock, shock and awe. It was just like, here she is going up on this, like, giving one of the most self-serving fucking speeches,
yeah,
probably in the history of the U.S. Senate, in order to defending Kavanaugh, making all these contradictory statements saying that, like, you know, yeah, Christine Blasey Ford might have been raped, but it wasn't Kavanaugh who did it, because we can't tell who did it, because the limited FBI report said it, nothing. It was a cover up. It was a sham. And basically, like, that the Democrats, she basically said what Scott Wagner said in support of Kavanaugh, that the Democrats are weaponizing women's issues.
Yep.
Like, she basically said that, you know, the Democrats are weaponizing the Me Too movement, which is exactly what Scott Wagner said. It's exactly what these Republicans have been saying. And then she went on this fucking tour of TV shows over the weekend. Like she did something special.
And did the same thing.
Yeah. And just blame victims.
Yeah, and let's say this. You know, the whole this idea about weaponizing the Me Too movement. Here's the thing about weaponizing the Me Too movement. What that assumes at its base, right, is that these allegations are false, right? Because basically saying that they're just going to use the Me Too movement to try to take down these people on their false allegations. That's the structure that they're saying. As opposed to saying, you know what? Women are finally at the point that they've absolutely had it. And it's no longer going to be acceptable for men who sexually harass, who are just horrible human beings, rapists, sexual assaulters, right? Who contribute to that culture that is no longer acceptable. That is not weaponizing the Me Too movement. That is saying that enough is enough, period. No more. And that's, and you know, again, Susan Collins is part, the part about Susan Collins is not just self-serving, right? Is that it becomes window dressing for the entire Republican Party. That she, the reason why she's been sent out to talk about her freaking speech all this week is because they want to give the Republican Party this moderate gloss and the face of a woman to push back against the kind of like the upsurge that is happening.
The Phyllis Schlafly of the Senate, pretty much.
Yes.
Like pretty much the Phyllis Schlafly of the U.S. Senate at this point. Yep. Like going, and for those of you who don't know, Phyllis Schlafly was the one who campaigned against the Equal Rights Amendments back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yep.
You know, to give women an equal representation at work, and that's what Susan Collins did. She is the Aunt Lydia.
Yep.
Like of the women's of like the of Gilead at this point.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Like,
yep. It's throw your, you know, it's what the conservatives do so much. They are great at having women who hate the women's rights movements on TV, black people who hate civil rights. You know, it's what conservatives do to get back at the left.
That's right.
And, you know, like the biggest thing about this, like I have family members who voted for Kavanaugh or not who voted for Trump and who wanted Kavanaugh through, like this is a win in their eyes just for the sake of winning.
That's right.
Regardless if it's going to fuck over people for generations to come, they got their win. Yep. It's nihilism. It is like, it is in my eyes, it's completely unforgivable. And I've told my family members this, like you will never be forgiven for voting for Trump. You will never. You are an embarrassment for voting for Trump. Like, yep. and you will never be forgiven for this.
Yep.
That's the point where I'm at. Like, it's.
I look, man. I agree. I have problem holding grudges to begin with, but this one is that one that will never go away. Never.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, I know there's a lot of people out there who want to play nice, want to kind of have a return to where we didn't have to have these kind of conversations, where we didn't have to talk about power. But guess what? That's what this is, right? Democracy is not just about kind of like, you know, like having a nice brunch and kind of like being able to laugh and laugh and laugh and talk about stuff that we saw on TV over the weekend. No, right? This is the business of it. And we have not been practicing for a long, long time. And that we're doing it now. And if you know, if you need any evidence of that, you know, I check out. We have links here in the show notes today. But look at what is happening in North Dakota and in Georgia and at the Prairie View A&M University down in Texas.
In Florida. If you miss the deadline to register to vote because of Hurricane Michael, tough shit. You're not voting.
Well, they actually did extend. Here's the problem that happens with that is that they did not extend the online registration. Right. Despite the fact, I don't know, power's out. Right. But they basically said there was one day left to register in person. And they basically said the first day that the voter registration offices open again, they can go back and they have one more day to register. But you think about it like this. If you've lost your home,
you have no home,
or the voter registration area has been devastated. Right. And how do you know when it's going to open? Well, how is that going to be communicated? So effectively, it's the same thing. But I don't know. It's crazy. The thing that's crazy, if you look at what's happening, I mean, just give you the two. I'll run through these quick. One in North Dakota. Basically, what they did in North Dakota is that they said, nope, in order to be able to register for vote, to vote, you basically have to have a street address on your ID. Right? They already got voter ID, street address on your ID. The problem with that is that most Native Americans in the state, who especially ones who live on the reservations, right? Most Native Americans, let's say, do not have street addresses. They have P.O. boxes. Those are now disqualified, right? If you look at the map of where of who votes blue and who votes red, who votes Democrat, who votes Republican, those areas vote Native Americans vote primarily for the Democrats, and now they've just been disenfranchised. There's some court challenges to that, but that's happening. The college students, right, who normally could have voted, right, with their college ID or with their driver's license, now have to have their current college ID on their driver's license if they're able to register for vote. Most of them will be disenfranchised. That's important because Heidi Heitkamp is behind the polls already up there, a Democratic senator from North Dakota. That in Georgia, right, 53,000 voter registrations have been put on hold, right? Nearly 70% of the votes put on hold are black. Right. Surprise, surprise. Especially at a time when you have Stacey Abrams, who has potential to become the first black governor in that state's history. Right.
First black woman governor.
First black woman governor
in the country's history.
In the country's history. Right. Is that they're basically those registrations have been put on hold. Right. And it's at least 53,000. Right. And this happens at a time when the guy who's running for the Republican candidate for governor, Brian Kemp, he's currently Georgia's Secretary of State, charged with overseeing voter registration and fair elections. And he's refused to recuse himself from his role in doing that. So, I mean, I don't know how much more corrupt you need and conflict of interest you need than that. And then a Prairie View A&M University, just basically 1 week, basically, or less than a week, actually, before the deadline to vote, to register to vote, after the election officials had told students at this university who had legal battles to retain the right to vote on campus and where they are on campus, a week before they find out, the state gave them the wrong information about how to put their address down for voter registration. So now a bunch of those students are not clear about where they're going to be able to vote, if at all. Right. Those are just a few very small examples of what's going on. So, you know, this stuff is not going away. If you look at some of the Brennan Center reports, you'll see that kind of like, you know, the voter suppression continues. This is a bad scenario.
Bad scenario.
Last thing I want to mention is that, you know, sad commentary and upon our politics. Taylor Swift comes out, has an Instagram post, and, you know, she's basically steered clear of politics for a long time. She's basically come out and basically said that she's not going to vote for the Republican in Tennessee. She lives in Tennessee. And because of, you know, all the reasons that you would, you know, sane people would kind of want to make sure you defend women's right to choose, you know, that you don't want Medicare to be stripped away from people, all these kind of things. After she posted that, 65,000 new voter registrations came in a 24-hour period. All right, that's going to vote.org, I think, is where those numbers came in. And people got encouraged to vote. And on the one hand, and then you hear some of the reports on this, like Taylor Swift did this, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, this is what it takes? You're telling me Taylor Swift is what it takes? And we're going to have to think a lot about this, right? Because now we're in the realm of we have to deal with practical politics. And if that is what moves people to actually vote, well, you know what? Like, I'm prepared to kind of like, you know, whatever, swallow my pride about, you know, what kind of effective civic participation is and like look for celebrities, you know, because this is where we're at. So there you have it. Crazy, crazy. Anyways, we're going to go into just a little Pennsylvania focus because, as you can imagine, once again, it's off the rails with Scott Wagner. Like, seriously, I mean, whatever, man. I mean, it just, this is crazy. So we do what we can. But I want to remind everybody, listen, if you get a chance, become a member of Raging Chicken Press. Become a member at patreon.com/rcpress. You can become a member for as little as $5 a month. And, you know, we're looking even up to the midterms and past the midterms about what we're going to be needing to do. Hopefully, I don't want to go quite there yet, but I think we have a new writer that's going to be coming on. I'll let you know about that next week. We get some stuff formalized and everything's good to go, which is fantastic. Someone who's come from the western end of the state, but is now out on the east side. So that should be pretty cool. He's interested in pipeline stuff, interested in kind of the fracking stuff, and interested in, you know, democratic socialist politics. So that could be a really good thing. So if you want to help support that and make sure we can bring some more people on, because we're going to need a whole bunch of really kind of angry, fresh, and ready to get to go writers and commentators if we are going to be able to kind of fight the fight that needs to be fought. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press today. Go to patreon.com/RC Press. Become a member for as little as $5 a month. We'll be right back with our Pennsylvania focus. Whoa. I think. There we go. Right after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1845. That was the day that the first Industrial Congress of the United States met in New York City. People interested in the problems facing working people, including long hours, low pay, and unsafe working conditions, gathered together. The labor movement was just beginning in this country. These were the years when the early trade unions were formed. Women played an important role in the early labor movement. Female textile mill workers in Lawrence, Massachusetts began to organize for the 10-hour day. In 1844, they established the Lowell Female Labor Reform Association. Their goal was to improve working conditions in the mills. The Lowell Women's Group sent a representative to New York for the Labor Congress. Another important development of the fledgling labor movement was the establishment of labor presses. George Henry Evans, a labor newsman, also attended the Congress. He was the editor of a series of U.S. labor papers, starting with the Workman's Advocate in 1829. He had come to the United States from England, where he had been involved in the trade labor movement. He also attended the Labor Congress. The meeting recommended the formation of three organizations. First was an industrial brotherhood for workers, including farmers. The second was an industrial sisterhood for women workers. The third was a group for friends of labor. The Congress met again in New York in 1847, then again met in Chicago in 1850. These early efforts to establish larger labor groups did not gain much traction, but they began to lay the framework for workers to come together to discuss their challenges and imagine how they could work together to bring about change for better wages, shorter hours, and safer working conditions. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back. Whoa. I don't know what's happened on my soundboard today. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is a PA focus. Oh, man, once again, here we go, Sean. I don't know, where do you want to start?
Well,
Wacky Wagner world.
I think we should start with an update from the story I published first last week, and other news outlets finally got around to. Wagner held a fundraiser, while Wagner was in Erie at the Trump rally, he had a fundraiser going on in York with Jeanine Pirro speaking. Crazy Fox News analyst. We talked about her last week. He spent
Sean just like waves his hand away. He's like, yeah, we talked about that insanity last week. So
he spent $25,000 to bring Pirro in to speak for the fundraising event. We usually talked about the other things he's been fundraising for. She's been fundraising for Republicans for a while now in Pennsylvania. But a couple of people actually brought this up in the newspapers that, like, this was extremely odd for a candidate to be spending $25,000 on a guest for a fundraiser. Usually, like, there's a small honorarium. You pay for the lodging and travel and stuff like that, but you don't drop 25 large on a guest. So, and this came as he sent out a fundraising email last week on Saturday, saying that he tapped his fortune dry by dropping $10 million of his own dollars into his campaign. And he then went on to blame the Republican establishment for not helping him and undermining his campaign so Wolf could win. And he said he doesn't have to. He's not running because he has to become governor of Pennsylvania, and he does not have to endure this public lynching that is going on as well.
The public lynching, like what? Like, what does he even mean by that? I mean, seriously, what the hell is he talking about?
I guess because of like hanging out with the Moon family, you know, like the media reporting on his actual campaign. I mean, him just fucking up for the past 6 months.
To me, you know what that seems like to me? It doesn't seem like a public lynching. That seems like repeated failed attempts at political suicide. That's what that seems like to me.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, and he's like, you know, he's always surprised. He gets back up. He's like, damn, still alive.
He's like the guy who like sees the rake right in front of him, steps on it, and gets whacked in the face.
Yeah, exactly.
Turns around, fucking hits the other rake.
Does it again. Right. Back the other way. I mean, it's like the guy, you don't need to do anything. All you need to do is comment on what he's already doing.
Or just like watch his Facebook Live videos,
yeah,
stuff
exactly.
like that.
Exactly.
And so like we were joking that like this can't get any more crazier with Jeanine Pirro coming in for $25,000. Well, he announced today that Diamond and Silk are coming to Philadelphia and campaigning
My
for him.
God. Now we've talked about Diamond and Silk before on this program. But Sean, please remind everybody listening here who Diamond and Silk are if they don't know already.
Diamond and Silk are the two black females, women who have the podcast and were supporting Trump. And yeah,
Just go check it out, people.
Just Google.
Just go Diamond and Silk and Google that, and then
go on YouTube and go down that rabbit hole for about 20 minutes.
Right, exactly. and just like pay attention as your jaw slowly slips downward with the force of gravity and you're watching this stuff, right?
And one thing that's like one of the things that like amazes me is like Lou Barletta. I felt like Lou Barletta would be running a pretty racist campaign. I mean, he's not even running a campaign at this point. He's just like keeping his head down, making sure he doesn't fuck up and gets a job within the Trump administration. But holy shit, Scott Wagner's campaign is like really fucking racist.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, like dog whistle politics, he uses public lynching to his supporters. Like he said, it's a bunch of bullshit that Governor Wolf is helping out Puerto Rico. You know, it's, and he's doing it under the veneer of like having, oh well, I'm not racist because I have black friends.
Yeah, Trump's got black friends too. Don't you know that?
Yeah, they like to wear red hats.
Kanye.
But I mean,
no,
like,
seriously, Wagner's like it's like the same. It's like watching like the mini version of what's happening in national politics happening right here in our backyard.
Oh, Trump has Kanye West. Well, we're going to get Diamond Silk.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's no way. I'm not going to be upstaged by that guy. Diamond and Silk, right here in Pennsylvania. Oh, my God.
October 26th, Friday in Philadelphia.
Oh, my God.
I might have to go home and try to get to that event.
Holy Halloween. That's all I got to say is Holy Halloween. Oh, my God. My God.
Yeah.
So in a little bit more of a kind of, you know, okay, so there's the kind of craziness, like a little bit more of the kind of serious infrastructure kind of work that's going on here. We've got a new Koch brother funded organization that is in the state.
Yes. It's called the Commonwealth Leaders Fund, and they started back in the end of 2017. The first contributions from this group came from Howard Rich, who found U.S. term limits, and David Barnesfeld, who is the former chairman of the Commonwealth Foundation. They both set this. The first donations to this group was $20,000 from each of them. And, you know, they've gotten donations from people from American Enterprise Institute, people from like Matt Briere gave $1,000, Charles Mitchell, who is now the president of the Commonwealth Foundation, gave $2,500. And then this group received $2.75 $5 million from Students First, which is a pro charter school organization that's funded by a few hedge fund managers out in Philadelphia. And they also have gotten some funding from Betsy DeVos's Americans for Federation of Children in the past. Mm-hmm. If you look at made up a little flow chart of the money going in and money going out. Matt Brier's new organization is called the Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. It's headed by Matt Brier. David Barnesfeld, a trustee, who used to be with the Commonwealth Foundation, is now with Brier's group. And then this guy named Jeff Kendall. Jeff Kendall is on Brier's group, and he is also the chairperson of the Commonwealth Leaders Fund. So money in, money out. So this organization gave $100,000 to Jeremy Schaefer. This was the biggest campaign expenditure they had outside of giving $200,000 to the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania, which is a far right wing PAC union busting organization. Jeremy Schaefer beat Randy Volokovich in a primary. Volokovich is a Western Pennsylvania Republican who isn't a full Tea Party conservative. He's a conservative Republican who was fairly popular in his district. He always brought home the bacon for, his area. And this really pissed off Republicans that, the party voted for, he got primary by Schaefer and Schaefer won. Schaefer's district is in the northern suburbs of Pennsylvania, and this actually might be one of the first pickups for Democrats since the new maps have been implemented in 2012. Schaefer is not popular out there. Lindsay Williams is running for that seat. She was fired from her job, National Whistleblowers Alliance or whatever, something like that, mm-hmm. Organization, for forming a union. Then she's been working as a union organizer, organizing teachers since then. And her district overlaps with Connor Lamb's district, mm-hmm. or Connor Lamb's new district, pretty much. And if anyone's been following that race, Keith Rothfuss, who Lamb's running against, has been triaged, and his funding has been cut off from the National Party. So looks like Lindsay Williams is going to be benefiting. She's running a pro-union campaign. Connor Lamb ran on running a pro-union campaign against Saccone. You know, he flipped a district that was a 20-point favor in, of Donald Trump in a special election this past year. So it looks like that might be a pickup for the Democrats.
It's going to be big, man.
Yeah.
So are you still – so where are you on the on what the kind of – what this is going to look like in terms of state politics? I mean, how do you think this is going to shake out overall? Are you still standing by your predictions?
Yeah. I think Democrats, Senate Dems are going to pick up 4 to 6 seats, and the House Dems are going to pick up 15. I am holding firm on that number.
All right. All right. I'm just giving you the space to see if there's any question whatsoever there. Let you sit with it for a little bit. But
you look at also what's happened. Mari Nothstein out in another poll came out showing Susan Wild up by 19 points. Mm-hmm. That's probably a bit of an outlier. But Mari Nothstein's campaign has been triaged from the National Republicans, funding cut off. And that's more bad news for people like Pat Brown out in that district.
Yeah, I'll say.
Yeah. Yeah. So
we're going to see. I mean, I think this is going to be, I have very, very good feelings about what's happening in the Lehigh Valley races. I think it's remarkable, to see what we've got with, I know we're going to talk about Perry in a minute, but then we see on Perry and a bunch of other races where people are just, really, closing the gap, and in places where it's been.
I mean, Scott Perry is a 1-point lead over George Scott,
which is amazing.
According to public policy polling and PPP polling, they have a really good rating with 538. I guess it's Democratic leaning, but usually their polls are pretty much spot on with these congressional races, and their methodology is up to date. And this now has a pro-Trump PAC dumping $700,000 into the district to help save Scott Perry, which is what you want. You want to be bleeding these people dry.
Yep. Yep. Crazy, man. Crazy. I don't know. I don't know. What else we got, Sean?
I guess I could tell you a fun story.
Oh, please do.
So the other night I was out taking pictures of the Capitol.
Nice.
Which came out great. Because
they
put pink dye in the fountain behind the Capitol for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. Ran into some Republicans, ran into the same Republicans at the bar afterwards. Mm-hmm. And they seemed to be very disillusioned as to what's coming their way.
Oh, did they now?
Yeah.
They were crying in their beers a little bit, so to speak.
No, so we started talking. I started talking with one. I'm not going to name drop them, but
one
looked at me. He's like, "So where are you from?" I was like, "Oh, I'm from Horsham." He's like, "Oh, what brought you out here?" I was like, "Politics." I'm wearing my Raging Chicken shirt. He's like, "Oh, which side?" I'm like, "D," and I went up like this. As soon as he saw this shirt, he was like, "Face just dropped." But it seems like their caucus is just disillusioned as to what's coming their way. These are two Philadelphia suburban Republicans, and they actually think that their caucus is sticking up for them when that's not the case. Mike Terzai is willing to give up the House Republicans in the southeastern part of the state in order to have a more pure caucus within the Republican Party.
Well, it's not going to practically speaking, right? That move by Terzai is not going to affect
leadership or
the majority for that matter.
No.
Right, it's just going to make them crazier.
Yeah, more concentrated.
More concentrated. It's like that kind of stuff that you put in your freezer when you want to make juice. You take out, you just add water, or you just drink it straight right from the can. That's it. Turns out, yeah. So I mean, you could see this, and this is, I don't know. I would love to say that we're going to see a major change in our state politics, but you know, I just think that we're going to look at some more. Again, we're going to see that, you know, the intensification of the crazy is what's coming our way.
Yeah, I mean, after the election, I do have a really good interview scheduled with someone, and we'll be discussing this.
Yes, everybody, you too will soon know about what that is if you vote. We have like voter ID requirements for people to be able to listen to that. How's that? No. Did you vote? No? You don't get to listen. No. Yeah.
Scott Wagner is standing next to six bundles of paychecks on the side of the road. Governor Wolf, let me tell you.
What? Are you just reading headlines from something right now?
Oh, my God.
Okay, go, Sean. What?
So Wagner just had a live video, right? Mm-hmm. And so Scott Wagner standing next to six. This is from Julian Roth on Twitter. Scott Wagner standing next to six bundles of paychecks on the side of the road says, quote, "Governor Wolf, let me tell you, between now and November 6th, you better put a catcher's mask on your face because I'm going to stomp all over your face with golf spikes."
What?
Yes.
Wagner said that?
Yeah, just now as we're on here. Wagner says it's because he's going to win. He's going to win this for the state of Pennsylvania, and we're going to throw you out of office. Add that he's sick of Wolf's negative advertisements.
Of what? Like having like Scott Wagner say what he says and then replaying it? I mean, like that's like... That's all you need to do against Wagner. Is like, this is what Wagner said. Any questions? Vote Democrat. You know, it's like, oh my gosh. Well, you know, again, this is the kind of stuff which, you know, I mentioned this before. There's all, you know, this big kind of craziness. Everyone's got their panties in a bunch on the right because of what Eric Holder was recorded saying. You know, basically, you know, so far, we're supposed to play nice, and Democrats supposed to play nice, and, you know, they go low, we go high, kind of garbage. And Herrick says no. He says no, right? When they go low, we kick them, right? And then the right said, see, they're calling for violence. They're calling for violence. What the hell is that? I'm going to stomp over his face with golf spikes?
Yeah.
I mean, this just shows you the kind of, like, different, like, discursive worlds that we're living in right now, right? But if a Democrat would say, can you imagine if a Democrat said something like that?
Yeah. Imagine a Democrat threatening a sitting governor with violence.
Yeah. Imagine that. Imagine what. First of all, one, is that even thinkable that there would be a Democrat that would do this? I mean, especially since Wiener is no longer there. He would probably be the one that would give that, you know, you get opportunity. One, for that to happen. Two, what would be the response? It would be on every freaking like talk show ad nauseum for the next like weeks. Because guess what, folks? They have a media infrastructure, right? And those of us on the left don't, right? This is why we do what we do. But crazy. Oh boy. Well, there's this weekend. This just in, more crazy. Which happens, you know, this has happened literally the last five times that we've been on the air, is that either like right as we're kind of winding up the last segment of Last Call, or kind of somewhere in the middle of the show, Sean's like staring at his Twitter account, and then he's like, oh my God, right, here's something else. Oh, crazy. Well, anything else for kind of the PA focus, Sean?
No, that's it.
That's it. More happy talk here for a Raging Chicken Press Out to Coop podcast. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be right back with this week's Last Call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting, and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. It's the last call. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is where we do space news, beer news, and anything else we think it's fun to talk about. But in space news this week, I know last week I had said that I had a bunch of space news that I wanted to talk about, and I was too, like, freaking, like, just, like, I don't know, overwhelmed with anguish and frustration and anger and exhaustion, really, after the Kavanaugh stuff. That said, oh, well, we'll push it to this week. Well, you know, whatever. That's just a fool's errand, because it's never going to get any better, right? It's going to continue to be as crazy as it is until we make a change, until we make a political change, until we make a cultural change, until we kind of take back power. But so I just got a couple items here in space news this week, which is kind of really cool stuff. Voyager 2, right, is they're expecting Voyager 2 to soon enter what they're calling wild space, or that's kind of interstellar space. And Voyager 1 kind of passed through and went into interstellar space a couple years ago now. And now Voyager 2 is kind of approaching the edge of this. And frankly, I've been learning a lot about this. You know, there was this early Star Trek episode, right, for the original series, where the Starship Enterprise approaches this kind of barrier. There's like, they show all these lights and everything like this, and they're leaving the solar system, and it's a big, the ship is rocking and all this other kind of stuff. And I remember always thinking, like, what the hell is that about? Like there's some sort of force field around the, you know, like around the solar system or something. And like, that doesn't make any sense, right? Because I'd never seen any maps. Well, it turns out that's actually kind of true. Right. And what happens is, it's not exactly what they depict on Star Trek, but just like the Earth has like a magnetosphere around it that actually prevents a lot of cosmic radiation and solar radiation from impacting us. Well, it turns out that the sun has a kind of a magnetic kind of shield, so to speak, that keeps out a lot of cosmic, like interstellar radiation that's coming from outside of our solar system. And it has a barrier, right? And as you approach that barrier, that's where the kind of the cosmic radiation starts to increase. And so that's how they know this. So it just kind of like, you see, what's one of these moments too as well, I was like to step back is like, you know, this is something that began, you know, decades ago. Right, was it the 70s or 80s when the Voyager was launched? And this thing is still going, right, and sending back information. And now it's in what they're calling wild space. You know, it's kind of like it's not part of a solar system. It's in between star stuff, and it's just kind of wild space. And that's just absolutely freaking fascinating to me. You know, check that out. There's some kind of just cool stuff about that, some cool science things about our solar system and the way that the sun actually not only provides us with light, but also protects us from a whole bunch of other kind of radiation and cosmic stuff that could be heading our way. Just fascinating. The other thing I wanted to mention, I didn't mention in the intro today, was that the other big news this week was the Russian Soyuz rocket program was grounded. This was after like an emergency abort last week. Why does that matter? Well, the Soyuz program, after the Obama administration canceled the space shuttle program without putting anything into its place, which I'm still a little upset about, as you might tell from my voice. Basically, we had no, as a country, right, we had no way of putting, of getting astronauts to the International Space Station in any way that was possible on our own land. So what would happen is that we've outsourced that to Russia, right? So that we, in order to kind of get up in the to the space station, have people get up at the space station and kind of and get the people up there back down, right? You use the Russian Soyuz space program. And the problem is with that is that they had to abort it like about 2 minutes into the thing. I think the rocket got destroyed. No one was killed, luckily. But that means now the program is grounded indefinitely. And now, this is my little pitch, and they don't say this directly, but you keep on hearing the reporting that says, oh, NASA's going to have to find some way of getting people to and from the ISS. My guess is what's going to happen is that there's a rush right now to have capsules. There's one by SpaceX. There's another one by, I think, Blue Origin. And the other one is kind of like by the Boeing Northrop Grumman, I think, alliance, the ALA it's called, of kind of introducing one of these things. And they have to go through a series of safety testing before they can allow this to go forward, right? My guess is what we're going to see that stuff fast-tracked, right, which is going to be, you know, we're going to privatize it and we're going to fast-track it in such a way that not all the safety measures have been fully tested. That's just my guess, and maybe I'm wrong about that, but something to keep an eye out, because this may be that, you know, crisis moment, the shock doctrine moment for space, you know, kind of like in the space program, that's going to allow these kind of these corporate giants to basically to kind of jump in and take command over these over this stuff. So pretty crazy. So Sean, before we get to our gritty of the week, yours were bursting out laughing once again. Please do share.
I can't.
You can't?
No, I can't. Well, okay. So I'm watching a Wagner video.
Yes.
And he is standing in front of the billboard where, you know, it goes after him for suing 7,000 Pennsylvanians for being behind on their, bills. So I'm just laughing at that.
He's standing in front of that billboard?
Yes. And he's threatening stomp on Governor Wolf's face with spikes.
Wait, that's where he does it? In front of that billboard?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Crazy, crazy, crazy. Oh, well. Well, hey, so Sean, gritty, man.
Yeah. The anti-fascist superhero we've all been waiting to save us from this hellscape that we're living in.
He's here.
Yes, he is. And gritty might be like, okay, so I'm assuming everyone, like, so I'm a Flyers fan, and, you know, gritty is sort of like a play on the Philly Fanatic almost, which is the best mascot in the history of the world. But gritty is now becoming a close second.
Yep.
It's like the Philly Fanatic's fucked up cousin almost. But gritty, the Flyer, it's this ugly looking creature that like Philadelphia fans have embraced, the city has embraced, and also like the city's leftist community has embraced and has turned it into this huge anti-fascist meme generating icon. So Donald Trump was in Pennsylvania a couple weeks ago, and people were, had Gritty with the anti-fascist flag on a banner said, "Trump, get the fuck out of Philly," with Gritty holding the flag with the three arrows on it and stuff like that. And since then, they have just like the Gritty memes have just gone through the roof. There's a couple of really good ones, like the Pepe frog in a guillotine that has it feels good, man. And then another one that has a good night alt right, and has the Gritty meme punching out a Nazi Pepe frog. And I mean, no, it's getting to the point where the Wall Street Journal published an op-ed denouncing Gritty and the anti-fascists. They're using Gritty as their own meme and their rallying cry.
Yeah, and that column from the Wall Street Journal was like, you know, by Jillian K. Melchior, I think her name is, Melchior, right? And she said, you know, "I wish that he could belong to all of us, to Philadelphia, not to far-left activists." It was awesome. I got to say, I got to read just a little bit of this from The New Yorker, because The New Yorker wrote up about Gritty, too, as well.
The Daily Beast, like...
Right. Well, here's The New Yorker on this, right? So this is, quote, "But Gritty is not for everyone. Or, that is, Gritty, despite the Flyers' wide net marketing blitz, does not belong to everyone. As the mascot was gaining fame, he was quickly seized by the left as a symbol of progressive politics and resistance to Trumpism. In the early days of Gritty Mania, the socialist magazine Jacobin tweeted, 'Gritty is a worker,' and the designation stuck. On October 1st, when the president was in Philadelphia to address the meeting of the National Electrical Contractors Association, several protesters held anti-Trump signs and banners featuring Gritty, yielding images that went viral. One showed an extra crazed Gritty biting the arms off of Trump. Another featured Gritty waving an Antifa flag with the words, 'Gritty says GTFO of Philly,' right? And Gritty does look a little bit does look a bit like an addled version of Karl Marx or a deranged Fidel Castro, and his mad eyes make him appear capable of mass action mayhem. But there is, of course, nothing especially progressive, socialist, or anti-fascist about him. In fact, he's just easy to imagine have it the other way around," right? And it kind of goes on, but it's just hilarious, right? That this was seized on so quickly, because when Gritty first appeared on the scene, right, people were like, "What the hell is that?" Right. And thought it was the biggest like error on the part of a mascot. And it turns out that it just went nuts.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like the. I mean, it's just the free advertising it's been getting.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
But good off, you know, way to go. Do the cultural politics left. Way to go, man. That was awesome. All right. This is what we need. This is the kind of like disrupting the cultural stream right there. It is. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Culture jamming at its best.
Yeah.
So I've got a couple things from Free Will. I did mention this last week. I don't think I mentioned it last week, but they've got, and I don't have this. I'm a little bit behind in my updating my beer collection at home. Frankly, it's just, well, whatever. So they have tomorrow, Free will be releasing Sir Lamington. Sir Lamington is an Imperial Milk Stout, right? It's going to be available in 4-pack cans at both locations. And it comes in at 10.8 ABV, right? And this is the description of it. "It was inspired by the ever-popular Australian confection by the same name." I have no idea what that is. "Lamingtons, or Lamos for short, are perfectly square, bite-sized pieces of butter cake coated in chocolate and then rolled in coconut. We fell in love with these tea time treats because they are divinely balanced, spindly sweet, and rich, blah, blah, blah. Sir Lamington, our liquid interpretation, this iconic pastry, exhibits the same exquisite richness." So that's available at both locations. And what's interesting, too, as well, they have one of the regular food trucks that comes by Free Will's called the Flying Pie Guy. And I'm just wondering if that's part of where they get this from. The Flying Pie Guy is a guy who immigrated to the U.S. from Australia. And one of these things in Australia that everyone was, you know what a chicken pot pie is, right? Well, it was kind of like a whole bunch of versions of these pies, right? These hot pies. And it's one on the food truck. And we've gotten them a couple times. They're great. That's kind of cool. The other one, which is actually released last weekend, which I can't remember if I talked about, the coffee cherry cream pie. That's a cream ale with coffee, right? And let me give you a little bit of description if I can get it to come up. That, once again, is available in four-pack cans. I think there's still some available both locations. That's a little bit lower on the alcohol, 6.4%. And the beer was created after a night spent with friends sipping coffee spiked with cherry brandy, eating cream puffs, and discussing which of the Mighty Ducks movies was the best. Right. So there you go. So that's available at Free Will 2 as well. And just as a heads up, on the 21st, that's next Sunday, Free Will will be having their Oktoberfest celebrations from 12 to 5. Do step by, stop by there. Not only will they have five traditional German beer styles on tap that the folks from the Breadbox Bakery, the Breadbox and Bakery will be on site to fill up your belly with upbeat, great food, German food, and there'll be some German music and so on. And the cool thing, too, as well, we just got word on this, too, as well. I don't know. I haven't talked about this on the podcast before, but Breadbox and Bakery, who I've spoken about before, there used to be a restaurant that was called Down to Earth Cafe, which was also owned by the same guy, Ryman. And the Down to Earth Cafe, to much of our dismay, not too long ago, shut its doors. And we thought that was the end of it. But it turns out it was not. And I got confirmed this directly from Ryman's mouth, right? I asked him directly about this. They will be reopening a kind of new and improved one right in the heart of Perkasie. So there's been a new building that was put up, and there's lots of space. It's been empty for a while, and there's this great corner corner storefront that is just built for a restaurant and a place like this, and that's exactly where they're going. So I will let everybody know when that opens up, and I'm going to encourage everybody to go and check it out. What's going to be cool about this, too, as well, is that it's going to be available for parties and a bunch of other things. And one of the things that I'll be talking with Ryman about is to see if we can do a Raging Chicken celebration there. I think it would be the absolute perfect place, perfect location for it, supporting some just absolutely amazing business that is dedicated to local ingredients, to local farmers, and building a sustainable culture right here in Perkasie, PA. So kudos to them. Oh, cool. Yeah, so that's what I got, Sean. Anything else, man?
That's it.
You're having kind of crazy fun with your Twitter feed today.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, so that's I'm going to have to package that laughter and use it as a sound drop at some point. There it is, like that.
Yeah.
All right, man. What, you got any plans for the weekend?
No. Just watching Scott Wagner implode.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you watch the Eagles game last night?
Yes, I did.
And what did you think?
They got a game to get the season going. I mean, like, the Giants are an inferior team to begin with.
Uh-huh.
And it was, yeah, so.
So you weren't that, you didn't care?
Oh, no, I mean, I cared that they won. I expected them to win. I wanted them to win.
But you were bored? You're bored by the Eagles last night?
No, I was just sitting there watching it and, you know, just making sure that they won.
You was making sure that they won?
Yeah.
Because you didn't know that Sean is the linchpin that determines whether or not the Eagles win.
Yeah.
So, you know, even though he didn't want to watch them play last
night.
I've
been cutting back my beer intake the past couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So, I literally went from, last Thursday through Monday without having a single beer.
Yeah.
I had some this week, and now I've been back on that couple days without having a beer. So it's,
well, that's actually a version of what I was going to say before is, I've been behind in my, picking up these new releases just because I haven't been drinking as much beer, to be honest with you. Not that that's a bad thing, right? That's a
good thing. I've been focused on getting into the gym, getting my back into shape, which is my back's feeling a lot better now. But yeah, just making sure that.
Yeah, yeah. I've been focused on not falling into despair. That's what I've been focused on.
Yeah.
Seriously, I kid you not. The one bit of tidbit news that I got for the weekend is that my kids and I will be going to Mind Fair this weekend. Right. So it'll be kind of the giant Minecraft fest down in the Philly Convention Center area. I forget what the hell it is, but it's in King of Prussia area or something like this. Not King of Prussia area, the other one. I don't know. But it's one of where you have all these big kind of conventions of they do Comic-Con stuff down there. They do they have a Lego fest.
Is it out in Oaks?
What's that? Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yep, in Oaks, PA. That's right. And so they have the big Mind Fair thing on Sunday. I'm totally excited about it. We got a little VIP passes. We'll get to go early, get our Minecraft swag, and just have a good time with my kids. And hopefully a couple of their friends are going to come down too as well. And so I'm looking forward to that. So, cool, man. Well, hey, I wish you a great weekend, and may you enjoy some of this weather because it's so freaking nice outside. And like windy, cloudy, and cold, not cold, cold, but cool. In some cases, you might say that's not the best weather in the world, but man, I was loving it.
It feels
great. I was
walking
my dog this morning. Yeah, it's great. So cool. Well, man, here's to it. Can't wait to see what happens in this next wacky week of Wagner. We'll see what goes on. Remember, everybody, fight the good fight when it comes to climate change. Make sure that you're going to encourage everybody you know to register to vote. If you miss the October 9th deadline, you are shit out of luck, and you will not be able to vote, and we will hold it against you in the future. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Become a member. Patreon.com/RC Press, as little as $5 a month. We'll talk to you next week, everybody.
See ya!
You have the chance to stop the radical Democrats by electing a Republican House and a Republican Senate. Democrats have become totally unhinged. They've gone crazy. The Democrats have become too extreme, and they've become, frankly, too dangerous to govern. They've gone wacko. You don't hand matches to an arsonist, and you don't give power to an angry left-wing mob, and that's what the Democrats have become.